Wing TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Wednesday, March 16th, and you're watching Day 8 of 9/11 on Trial. I'm Lisa Giuliani, and you're watching Wing TV.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. In a very short while, we'll be appearing on The Power Hour with Dave Von Kleist and Joyce Riley. We've been looking forward to this show for quite some time, so we hope you check it out. And also, we have a number of other radio appearances upcoming, which Lisa is going to fill you in on.
We will be on The Power Hour at on the 10 a.m. hour, so check that out at thepowerhour.com. We'll also be doing Stanley Monteith's show, Radio Liberty, Monday, March 21st at 11 p.m. Eastern. Erskine Overnight, which airs at midnight Eastern Time, Saturday, March 26th. Visigoth's show, April 13th, which is a Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. And his show is From the Grassy Knoll. And also appearing with Gianni Hayes on The New World Order Disorder, also on April 13th.
And we also hope to appear on a couple other shows, because on April 19th is the rally, the 10-year rally in Oklahoma City.
Right.
We'll be leaving here on the Saturday before then, traveling out to Oklahoma City. So anyone that can make it, we'd love to see you out there. Show your support for this cause. And, you know, it's just something that all of us should do. Now, here's what we're going to do today and also tomorrow. As we said on day one of this trial in our introduction, there's two articles contained in this book, 9/11 on Trial, that are different from the witness testimonies. Now, instead of getting actors in here to read these chapters, what we said in this introduction was that I was going to read one of them and Lisa the other. And the reason we did so is you'll see they're just articles. Mine is entitled The Jet Fuel. How did it heat the World Trade Center Tower? And basically, did burning jet fuel cause the World Trade Center towers to collapse? Now, what I'm going to do is just read this article. And in all honesty, folks, it might be the most boring, in one sense, chapter in the book, because it's the one that's filled with the most calculations. But in another sense, it might be the most important chapter in the book, too, because these calculations scientifically prove that the temperatures within the World Trade Center towers never got above 500 or some degrees, and that's very vital. So when I go through this chapter, I'm not going to read all the calculations because I don't want to bore you to death. If you want to see all of them, you just get the book and everything's provided in there. This study was done by the Vancouver Independent Media Center on February 27th, 2003. And then tomorrow, Lisa is going to read the infamous Kevin Ryan letter. So we just wanted to kind of update you on this, let you know what to expect. And shortly we'll go to the courtroom.
Okay, and without any further ado, we join Judge Alan Kirkpatrick for the proceedings of 9/11 on Trial.
Please be seated. Court is now in session. Today we will continue with the people's case against the United States federal government in regards to the events of September 11th, 2001 at the World Trade Center Towers in New York City. Let us proceed. Witness, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. Today I'm going to read an article from the Vancouver Independent Media Center, but first, I'd like a brief introduction that we've entitled, Did Burning Jet Fuel Cause the World Trade Center Towers to Collapse? By this point in the trial, we've seen scores of evidence casting doubt on the government's official version of events that a raging inferno, which resulted from burning jet fuel, caused the World Trade Center towers to collapse. At this point, we're going to cut directly to the chase and determine exactly how hot this burning jet fuel got. This article is called The Jet Fuel: How Hot Did It Heat the World Trade Center? It was compiled by the Vancouver Independent Media Center on February 27, 2003. The article begins by saying, imagine that the entire quantity of jet fuel from an aircraft was injected into just one floor of the World Trade Center, that the jet fuel burnt with perfect efficiency, that no hot gases left this floor, and that no heat escaped this floor by conduction. With these ideal assumptions, we can calculate the maximum temperature that this one floor would have reached. Now, a Boeing 767 is capable of carrying up to 23,980 gallons of fuel. And it is estimated that, at the time of impact, each aircraft had approximately 10,000 gallons of unused fuel on board. This figure comes from the FEMA report, chapter number 2. Now, since the aircraft were only flying from Boston to Los Angeles, they would have had nowhere near an entire load of fuel on takeoff, because an aircraft can go to a maximum range of 7,600 miles. They would have carried just enough fuel for the trip, together with some safety factor left over. Remember, and this is the reason why they weren't completely full, is that by carrying excess fuel means they have higher fuel bills and less paying customers. The aircraft would have also burnt some fuel between Boston and New York. Now, what we propose to do is pretend that the entire 10,000 gallons of jet fuel was injected into just one floor of the World Trade Center, that the jet fuel burnt with the perfect quantity of oxygen, that no hot gases left this floor, and that no heat escaped this floor by conduction. With these ideal assumptions, none of which were met in reality, we have to point out, we will calculate the maximum temperature that this one floor could have reached. Of course, on that day, the real temperature rise of any floor due to the burning jet fuel would have been considerably lower than the rise that we calculate, but this estimate will enable us to determine that the official explanations are lies. We have to note that a gallon of jet fuel weighs about 3.1 kilograms, so the 10,000 gallons on board would have weighed 31,000 kilograms. Also, jet fuel is a colorless, combustible, straight-run petroleum distillate liquid. Its principal uses are as an ingredient in lamp oils, charcoal starter fluids, jet engine fuels, and also insecticides. It is also known as fuel oil number 1, kerosene, range oil, coal oil, and aviation fuel. Also, it is comprised of hydrocarbons with a carbon range of C9 through C17. Now, at this point, I'm going to interject and say that there's going to be quite a number of calculations that I'm not going to go through entirely. So when I come to these, I'm just going to kind of paraphrase what it says. Now, the flash point of jet fuel is in a range of anywhere from 110 degrees to 162 degrees. Please keep those in mind. And has an ignition temperature of 410 degrees. Depending on the supply of oxygen, jet fuel burns by one of three chemical reactions. Now, three of these reactions are given right here in the book. Now, reaction number 1 only occurs when jet fuel is mixed well with air before being burnt, as an example in jet engines. Reactions 2 and 3 occur when a pool of jet fuel burns. When reaction 3 occurs, the carbon formed shows up as soot in the flame. This makes the smoke very dark. Now, in the aircraft crashes at the World Trade Center, the collision would have mixed the fuel with a limited amount of air available within the building, but the combustion would still have been mainly a combination of reactions 2 and 3, as the quantity of oxygen was quite restricted. Now, since we don't know the exact quantities of oxygen available to the fire, we have to assume that the combustion was perfectly efficient. That is, the entire quantity of jet fuel burnt via reaction number 1, even though we know that this wasn't the case. This generous assumption will give a temperature that we know will be higher than the actual temperature of the fire attributable to the jet fuel. Now, we need to know that the net calorific value of jet fuel when burnt via reaction 1 is 42-44 mJ divided by kJ. And then we'll use this higher value, and it will lead to a higher maximum temperature than the lower value. Again, what the Vancouver Independent Media Center is doing is being outrageously generous in their assumptions. For a cleaner presentation and simpler calculations, we also assume that our hydrocarbons are of the form CnH2n. And they're going to make an assumption here, going to another calculation. And they say this model doesn't take into account that the reaction is proceeding in air, which is only partly oxygen. And they go into some more calculations, and pretty much, folks, this whole page here, as you can see, is calculations that I won't get into. So we're going to go now. At the bottom of the page, they say each of the towers contained 96,000 short tons of steel. That is an average of 820 tons per floor. So let's suppose that the bottom floors contained roughly twice the amount of steel as the upper floors, since the lower floors, of course, had to carry more weight. So we estimate that the lower floors contained about 1,100 tons of steel, and the upper floors about 550 tons of steel. Now they go into quite a number of calculations again, on and on and on and on. And they take into consideration the water vapor, carbon dioxide, nitrogen, steel, how many kilograms of concrete were in the building. And then they go into this table here where they do some more calculations on the concrete, the steel, the nitrogen, the water vapor, and the carbon dioxide. Then they substitute all of these values into these equations then, which I'm not going to get into. And we'll go over then to the next page, another big set of calculations. And finally, now here's the important part. After all of these calculations, they say, if we assume a typical office fire at the World Trade Center Tower, then the jet fuel could have only added 255 degrees centigrade at the very most to the temperature of the fire. To summarize what this means then, we've assumed that the entire quantity of jet fuel from the aircraft was injected into just one floor of the World Trade Center, that the jet fuel burnt with the perfect efficiency, that no hot gases left the floor, and that no heat escaped this floor via conduction. Now here it is, the grand finale. They conclude, we have found that it is impossible that the jet fuel by itself raised the temperature of the floor, this one floor under ideal, perfect conditions, that it was impossible that it raised the temperature of this floor beyond 536 degrees Fahrenheit. Now please keep this in mind in regard to all our earlier testimony. Now if this temperature is nowhere near high enough to even begin explaining the World Trade Center collapse. Thank you very much.